I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Taste the Mediterranean through March 19th at Whole Foods Market. Save on animal welfare certified bone-in beef short ribs, sustainable wild-caught sockeye salmon, and more. Find sales on Parmigiano-Reggiano, charcuterie and ground lamb. Grab an olive boule bread from the bakery. Plus, wines from the Mediterranean start at just $8.99. Taste the Mediterranean now at Whole Foods Market. Must be 21 plus. Please drink responsibly.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. So today on the podcast, the one and only Bad Boombox. This dude is amazing. I came across him during the pandemic through his kind of TikTok and Instagram. And his music, he makes banging techno, like really hard techno. His social medias are great. He's just kind of created a brand for himself, and I love it. I love what he's done. So I wanted to get him on the podcast. I've spoke to him on and off for a few months now, and he's a really nice guy, really, really nice guy. Great conversation. So yeah, without further ado, Bad Boombox, what's cooking? Good looking.
Hey, what's good?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Finally got a chance to talk, man.
I know.
Saw you recently.
Yeah, I saw you at the Chris Lake show the other night, and it was good to like catch up. Yeah, but how was the show after? I know you played some warehouse.
Yeah, we stopped by for the Chris Lake show to, you know, get the ears a proper warm up, and yeah, didn't expect to see you there, but you know, it was good running into you, and then yeah, went to a warehouse after, was there like late, yeah. And you know, I love those kinds of gigs, just playing whatever I want, you know.
Yeah, you don't often get to do it in America as well, because it's the licensing laws and all of that, and they're always kind of like very low key. Is the underground scene big in LA? Do you find?
Oh yeah. That's like the main, I find it to be like the main like driving force really behind at least the, more like the techno and tech house culture. You know, it's like one of the last places you can like really go express yourself. Mm. And yeah, that's true in every other big city, but LA's got something special going with that. I love, there's something interesting about it when in whatever big city you're in, whatever the mainstream culture is, there's always an equal and opposite reaction.
Yeah.
And so because like the LA, you know, like the Hollywood and all that, like takes up so much of people's space, then they go to the warehouses and they rage, and you know, it's fun.
Yeah. There's always room in every city for the misfits, as I call them. It's not necessarily calling them wrong, but just the people that want to step outside of what everyone else is doing and kind of step outside the box and just Yeah, you're right. Express themselves rather than just following the crowds and going to what everyone else is going to.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard though. Like there's like a certain district in LA that, you know, it's become a thing at, because it is hard to commit to traveling. You know, like LA is like so big. It's the size of, you know, like a state.
It's huge.
And you need a car to get everywhere. And now recently Uber prices have been crazy. Like since the end of the pandemic, they just decided the price gouge or something. And yeah, so like people committing to plans, it's tough. So when there is something, they're committed and they go like all night and, you know, as opposed to like bouncing around and like flaking on certain things.
I think that's the whole point about the underground, which I think kind of gets lost in the word underground, right? Is it's underground because it's supposed to be for the minority, and it's the minority. It's for cheap. It's supposed to be cheap, if you know what I mean. It's not supposed to be an expensive practice. Going to a dingy warehouse is not supposed to be expensive, whether that's like ticket price, whether that's getting to the venue. Like, yeah. It's all those factors, and after a pandemic, it's all the external factors that we can't control that just got even more expensive, whether that's living cost, whether that's groceries, whether that's kind of Ubers, like everything's just got more expensive, which then makes the underground even smaller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's having that accessibility and all that. And obviously each city is going to have its own different, like, flair on it. LA, I've noticed, like, people like to, in these spaces, they like to explore too. There needs to be some kind of like exploration factor. You know, just like just engaging things to do like throughout the night, like instead of like just one dance floor, there's like, you know, like little areas they can go in and find out for themselves. And
well, you know, I think it's about the experience, isn't it? It's not just about who's DJing. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
Generally in the underground, it happened in the UK in the 90s with like the rave scene and like the free parties. It was never about the DJ. It was about the experience of the community getting together.
Actually, this most recent gig, it was it's something I hadn't seen in a really long time. And I mean, I wish I could have gone raving in the 90s. I was just a kid, but from what I see, it's that it's not so much about the DJ. People go to dance, and when they have space to dance, and you know, there was points during the show where, like, you know, people have their back turned towards me, they're dancing with each other, and it just like, it's like, wow, this is fucking awesome.
It's
like,
awesome, right?
And you know, you just provide the music. You don't have to be, you know,
center of attention all the time. Yeah, and I think that's the thing that I like. I think that culture will slowly start to come back when people just get so fed up with just going to see headliners, I think. But I think I think promoters need to change that realistically. I think promoters need to, it's not a need, and I don't want to say should or shouldn't, because at the end of the day, it's still a business. But I think you'll find more and more undergroundy parties that you kind of get more of a culture with, whereas I don't want to kind of it's not even throwing anyone under the bus, it's just facts, like the sounds, the exchanges, the academies, they're big businesses. They're not about it's not about creating culture. It's about putting a DJ on that everyone wants to see, and everyone and them selling as many tickets and then selling as many bottles. And like I've had it on an occasion in certain venues. I'm not going to throw them under the bus, where like I've been doing like an all night, when I did my open to close tour, I used to play like drum and bass at the beginning, like liquid drum and bass.
Oh, and hell yeah.
Like, practically no one's in the club right at the beginning. So I'm just playing it for myself. And we had promoters be like, can you not play this? And we were like, well, why? And they were like, well, we've had bottled people come in that want to buy tables and they don't like this music.
Dude, I had that in college. Like, it's when I started DJing. It's, same thing. It's like, a lot of time, even like the manager of the club would like come like tell me what to play. And, you know, I mean, it's the gig, but, you know, it's like baby steps. Like you got to do that before you're an artist. But, you know,
I understand. Yeah, I understand it to a certain extent.
I get the business side.
Yeah, it's just how do you switch that business to the culture, and how do they kind of mix? There's some people that do it really well. It's a tough one. It's a tough one. You're also walking a very interesting line, because you're like, you make and play super kind of underground music, but you're also like ridiculously famous on social media.
So, getting there.
Yeah, but like, so it's like, how does that work?
Well, I mean, it's been a, you know, it's been a transition. When I started Bad Boombox and started TikTok, it was actually exactly 2 years ago.
Okay.
I was living in Berlin, and yeah, it was like, at the time though, it was a funny story. I was like crazy broke. Still kind of am, but like it was, I was just backpacking around Europe. I was living on like $25 a week, just taking whatever I could get.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it wasn't my intention to just like blow up on social media. Like I never had that in mind. I was, you know, just trying to post like funny things, but, on the music side, it was, you know, I needed things that worked for, like the labels I was talking to, yeah. And, you know, I just needed to get my name out there. So like I would compromise sound a little bit, but you know, in the past, like since the pandemic, in the past year or so, and, you know, became friends with Justin Jay, and he helped me kind of just unlock this part. It's like, yo, you don't have to do all that. Like, yeah. It's like, just do the shit that like is like really fun just for you. And so, you know, now in the past year, a couple months has just been, all the content, everything is just geared that way. I'll make memes if I want. Like I'll make, you know, like funnier videos if I want. I'll make some weird dark underground thing if I want. And yeah, and then whoever decides to follow me, like I stopped like really like pushing it.
Yeah. Why, you know? Is there any reason why you stopped pushing it?
It's like, I want it to be one of the things about this project is that, I want to be like super authentic. And when I was still living in Berlin, it was, I was doing fun things and funny things, but, the thing I learned from them and, all the partiers there and all the people I met at raves there, it's just like, man, you just got to keep it super real, and you keep it real, keep it relatable. And yeah. So even if it sacrifices some views or some likes or whatever, if I kept it real to the brand, then at the end of the day, I'm happy and, you know, I enjoy, just even if one person sees it, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
So what would you class as the brand? What would, if there were parameters, or have you not even set those, but like, what would it be? Cause it's a really interesting conversation, because I think as majority of artists probably couldn't relate to this, where you start off doing one thing and then you kind of pivot doing something else. And a lot of people are like, why the fuck are they changing? Because it's doing so well. But I think realistically, it's what the issue, what the genius side of it is, pivoting and keeping those people and also gaining more in the process.
Yeah, it's been a tough line to tread. It's like, I don't want to like really piss off the people that have already been following me for a certain thing. So, you know, I try to inject like little things that they're familiar with already. Like, a lot of it came from, this time last year I was living with my parents and I was just like bored, just making TikToks. So, bless you. And a lot of the all the meme pages, I would just post the things and they would just pick up on it and repost it. So this following just like went crazy. Yeah. You know, it just went from, I mean, I don't even know the numbers anymore, but, the thing about that is those people are following me for a reason. So it's like, at the end of the day, as a DJ, you know, we're in service to the people, you know, like I try to make it like not about me, even though my face is on all the things, you know? So yeah, like I don't want to do them dirty, but gotta evolve it, man. I want to be my goal is to, you know, just like play the techno stages, you know, be Euro boy, eat kebabs, like, and it's like, if I go too deep into the meme world, then like, that's, you know, what you become known as. And then I noticed me pitching the music was like, you know, to labels and demos and all that was like way harder when it's coming from the meme guy versus, you know, the guy that like happens to make memes, but is like really a, you know, legit artist.
I think the thing is though, your like TikTok and your Instagram, like from what I've noticed, and maybe I wasn't following you too much during the actual meme period. So maybe I've just seen the kind of pivot, but nice. your videos. So maybe you're actually think you're still in the meme boy, but from the way I look at it, it's like, yes, I look at you as a TikTok, but as somebody that's famous on TikTok. 100%.
Hell yeah.
But I also look at you as somebody that's authentic to your brand, and you do what you do at the end of the day. And I think there's something really authentic about it. Like, how many people are doing what you do and that successful with it? Like, there's probably two people I know off the top of my head, and and you. And I think it's really interesting, because I think now is like it's a really interesting time, and I think the pandemic kind of switched this big time, whereas you've got people becoming, and this sounds really bad, but I really don't mean this in a bad way, so don't take this in a bad way, but famous TikTok DJs. And I think I think it's gonna become more and more, but people will, it's going to be more so based on your brand and what you kind of represent as your brand. And then the music comes kind of second, but people know what they're getting. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I think it's a really interesting way the kind of the art space is going, because it's so online based.
Yeah. No, I totally feel that. That's first of all, thanks. That's that means a lot. That's that means the last couple months the pivot's been successful. If you see me as an artist over the meme guy, nothing wrong with memes. I love
Well, I think it's also that artist thing is you want to kind of be taken seriously, right? Like I had it with me. Like I've released some god awful shite music, and like one of them was Spandex, a record called Spandex, which I'm surprised you haven't even fucking done a meme about, because it would be hilarious if you did. But like, really? Yeah, it's awful. It's the most awful record. But at the time, I was like, this is going to be a hit, right?
Yeah, we're thinking in terms of hits and not in terms of, you know, like overall.
And realistically, at the time, I loved it, and then maybe 3 months after it was out, I was like, what the fuck did I do? And now I can't even erase that from my, I need to erase it from my memory, but I can't.
It just lives on there forever. It happened to be, it was released, right?
Yeah.
It was like
on Defected Records.
Oh, well, that's not going away.
But I think that's the amazing thing about the internet now, is that you can really just like pivot things pretty quickly. Like, and
yeah, people forget pretty fast.
People forget very fast.
That's what I'm hoping on. I still have my like old music before my music was ready. It was, you know, like being released. And I mean, there's never like a perfect time to release. Like, it's kind of, I think Justin told me this, it's kind of like getting a tattoo. You just, you know, you don't have any regrets. It's how you felt in the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get to wear that and see, I no regrets.
I disagree with that. I have regrets.
Yeah. But, I mean, I cringe a lot, dude. A lot of the time.
Exactly. That's the thing. Is that
my day is just.
Like, what the
fuck? Do you ever like audibly cringe at a memory? Like, you know, you like release a record or something, or.
Yeah.
Where you just make like. You just start like screaming, and your roommate's like, "What the fuck is going on?"
100%. Like I had a fucking I had a clothing company called Doing It for the Cuddles. Like, that is the most cringe thing ever. Like, let's be honest, it's fucking cringe. But realistically, when it was made, it was very authentic. It was just an inside joke between me and my friends. No one got that. No one knew that side of it. And it kind of just lived between our friends. But realistically, it was cringe as fuck. Like, it needed to stay in our friends. It didn't have to go anywhere else.
I feel like cringe comes from when it's like a forced emotion, like cheesy, you know, like, how do you define like a cheesy song, for example? It's like when you're forcing an emotion that's not really there. But the fact that you had an inside joke with your friends and all that, like, and it's real to you, then that makes it better. Even if you can explain it to like one person, it's like, makes it a real thing and not really that cringeworthy. Cringe is like when I had like memes or music, you know, 2 years ago, where I would just make it just to try to fit in and not, you know, like have it like be 100% authentic.
Yeah, I guess so. I think, right? I think it's just, it's strange. It's strange. how?
Walk me through your.
Go on.
What was your, when you were adjusting though, like when going from spandex to your thing, like how was that adjustment?
It's been a long process. So for me, it was like the spandex thing. Then during that time, I'd released on Dirty Bird, and then the Dirty Bird, I was kind of releasing on Dirty Bird on a regular. And then I got to the point where I needed to kind of change my music. I was making music that just didn't fit on Dirty Bird, and I wasn't playing music that was being released on Dirty Bird, and
did it naturally evolve that way, or did you have like an aha moment where like you just wanted to make something different?
It just naturally went. There was no like, I guess yes, there was probably some times where I was like, I've done the Dirty Bird thing. I kind of created a Will Clark sound on Dirty Bird, and it kind of did its, it ran its course. And the thing, when you're releasing on other people's record labels or some record labels, like, there's no real growth. You're literally as big as your last record. And if it's a DJ led record label, you're never going to be as big as the owner.
Right.
And you're never going to be able to progress past the owner, even if your records are bigger than the owner. Like, it's, and that's no dig at anyone. Like, it's just facts. It's just how it is. It's just how it is. There's not a single label that is run by a DJ that allows their artist to headline over the DJ. So it was like a case for me is like, okay, I have, my career was kind of going on the downward hill. Like, I was in bad management, so I left my managers. I stopped releasing on Dirty Bird. And
when was your last Dirty Bird?
I don't even know. I can't even remember.
That's why you have like a big LA following, right? Like, you're always in LA.
I'm in LA quite a bit. Post pandemic, it's been more. Like, we've got like three shows in consecutive months, but it's not supposed to be like that. I usually do LA twice a year. But yeah, Dirty Bird is the reason why I'm here. Like, I can't thank them enough for allowing me to have the career that I have. But for me, I need to take my career by the balls and build it, because no one else is going to do it for me at the end of the day. Which is when I took my manager on, Ryan, like, we really just put a big plan together. And by then I was releasing on Dents and Peaker's label. I had a remix on Drum Code. I had a release coming out on...
That's when I started following you. Those were, like, huge. The Dents and Peaker thing, like, that was, like, 2019, right?
Yeah, 2018, I think.
Oh, wow.
2018, maybe 2019. Yeah, right at the beginning.
Yeah, it was super different because then, you know, going back on the back catalog like a year prior, like the sound was, you know, it had evolved.
Yeah, that's and that's the thing, and it's kind of interesting, like what you where you're saying is where you're at with what you're what you were doing on social media and things like that. It's still your art, right? It's still you're still expressing yourself as an artist, whether that's making TikTok, whether that's making memes, or whether that's writing techno. Like we all evolve. Like I know you were doing like the more tech house stuff to start with.
Mm.
How did that evolve for you, going from tech house to techno?
At the time, it was like the types of shows I was going to, and it kind of it was like the pre-Berlin residency. Like I you know, I was going like a lot of like the like Croatia island clubs, like things like that. So it's just like what I was exposed to, and then my mentality being like super broke, I was like, all right, I need to do this to at least like get a name, and then kind of switch up into like the kind of stuff I want. And I mean, I still, you know, enjoyed making those tracks. Like, the guys that found me, like Slightly Sizzled, like they were starting out too. Like, I literally had 2 followers, and they were like, "Yo, you want to put this out?" And so I can't thank them enough.
Yeah,
same thing. But the sound just didn't feel. It was like half real, but half like I was like. I would like keep turning up the BPMs, and I was like, no, I have to, you know, and when you catch yourself saying like no to yourself a bunch, then it's, it builds up over time. And just like, it's like not the best feeling.
Yeah.
Like I kind of want, like if I wanted to make like some like 170, like electro, like breakbeat thing, like why not?
Yeah, definitely. You know? I feel that. And I think you do have to be happy. At the end of the day, we have to play the music ourselves. I don't know if you play your own music that often, but for me, it's like I'm going to DJ. I have to play my music, and if I don't like the music I'm playing, then what's the point?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think there comes like I've released records that I really really like that I wouldn't play because they just don't really fit in what I do, but I still really like them, and I still kind of stand by them. For what they are, yes, it's strange, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Super strange. So, how do you film all of this TikTok stuff? Because it's like this, like one TikTok is like one video takes a lot of work. From what I can imagine,
it started out that way, but the thing that helps is that my day job is, like I do a lot of like visualizers. I do like lyric videos, video editing, that kind of stuff. Actually probably for some people you might know. And, so it's just taking those skills, but then I don't know, that's like at a more professional level. So the hard part for me is to like make it look a little shittier, if that makes sense. Like I have to make it look DIY. Yeah. Like it's like I have my DSLR, like a nice lens, like no. Like I got just shitty little iPhone, like on the FaceTime cam. I got, this is my bedroom, but the green screen is just up permanently. I got like lights and I do several different types of things, but usually I just have like an ideas list of TikToks going where it's so long at this point and just cross out ones I did, in terms of like funny ones. Other ones are just like, just quick, like beat making things that, people like, there's like, I'm on TikTok anyway, just like scrolling. And if I come across some like dog yawning or some bird taking a shit or whatever, it's like, oh, I can, you know, just flip that real quick. It takes about, if I make the track in like a, 20-30 minutes, and then 20-30 minutes to film it, and then like, at most like half hour to like edit it and like put it all together. And some of them take off, some of them don't, and I kind of like that.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. That's the thing about TikTok, isn't it, is one can do really well and another one can do absolutely shite, just like a record. It's exactly like a record.
Exactly. But I love, that's the thing I love so much about the TikTok algorithm. It's like genius. I go back and watch my like old ones, kind of like when when you're several months away removed from the music you made, like you're no longer attached to it, so you can objectively listen to it. I watch the old TikToks, and I see a 100% direct correlation between the ones that are good, aka like relatable, and how many views they have. Something about the algorithm, just like they push the ones that, you know,
That
people would
work.
engage with, and just suppress the ones that are not really like engage worthy. And yeah, so sometimes you'll see like there's one point in my feed, it's like have like 1,000 views, 1,000 views, like 3.1 million, 1,000 views. How does that happen, you know?
Yeah, and you're right though, isn't it? At the end of the day, it goes back to what you were saying about DJ, you're the people's person. Like, you have to, you're the people's slave. Like, it's the same on everything else, right? We're putting content out for people to hope that people like what we put out, and then they then like us. And I think that's what people forget, is that a lot of DJs' content is just their ego. For their ego. It's just to be like, oh, look at me, look at this, look at that, la la la. No one gives a fuck if you got a Porsche or a Ferrari or on a private jet.
Oh my God.
Everyone
Never
wants
want to be that guy.
No, exactly. And everyone wants to see like some interesting shit. And it's something like my social media has always done pretty well, like over the years. It's kind of
You're
like,
really good on Instagram. You have a very, it seems like, just, you know, regimented and.
super regimented, and I'm trying to do that with TikTok, but I just like haven't. I need to speak to you pretty much, but I haven't got that. I haven't worked it out yet, if you know what I mean. And I know it's going to take me years to work that out, but.
Honestly, like with TikTok, it's I love, especially when it first came out. Like, I started posting 2 years ago when it was like pretty new, and it's still really new. And the thing I love about it is that you're just accessible to so many people. You access so many different things. Your algorithm is so curated to like the deeper you go, the deeper it gets. And like, I don't even get like the people dancing anymore. I get like weird distorted like historical information or like astrophysics TikTok. It's really genius, but it's a community at the end of the day. And what it takes to, you know, join the community is the same thing as everything else. You just spend time on it. Like, once you flip through a couple, you know, maybe on your free time while you're taking a shit, like, you know, half hour here and there, like see what things like people are posting. And I always check the comments. Like, any video I sort of like, I check the comments to see what people say. And you see like all this engagement and everything, people having like posting their thesis on there. Like, it's like, and then it kind of just gives you a sense of like what the community like kind of goes towards.
Do you enjoy it?
Yeah. I mean, whenever I have time now, like I used to make them like every day. Now it's like they have to be a little more curated, but every now and then I'll put up something I felt like in the moment, like if there's like a duet or something, like something that's just like asking for a duet or a stitch. It's you know, like even if no one sees it, it's like, it's funny to me, it's going up.
What's the reason behind not doing it so much now, or is it just the fact you just don't have the time?
Yeah, it's a time thing. Partially, part of it is actually like living here in LA. One reason why I'm moving is it's just like harder to like do things and like go outside and like get content and all that, and it like adds up. And you know, between that, like me doing my day job, like trying to pay the bills, and then also like trying to get the music thing going, like really been putting time into like developing the sound into what it is. And you know, it takes time, but I know TikTok's always there. You know, I know I can just keep post cool things that happen, and you know, kind of evolve it.
Totally. So where are you moving? I know this, but the people don't know this, so the people want to know.
Yeah, so you guys are one of the first to hear. Leaving LA, and I at this time, like, only got a couple days here. Doing a little mini US tour, and like stay with my parents for a month, and then going to Prague. Gonna be gonna be a Czech boy. Super stoked. I want to be like close to Berlin without actually living in Berlin, okay. But also like kind of help, kind of see like what the Prague scene's all about.
Have you been to Prague before?
Yeah. It's I've stopped by there many times. Really love the just like the energy of the city. The you know everything obviously looks magical. Yeah. I can like do a million things there, and then like the people's attitude I like a lot because it's like it just feels real. It's like authentic. Yeah, it's not.
Can't say I've ever been there.
Oh man, you gotta go.
Well, when you're out there, I'll come and visit you.
Like, hell yeah!
I've had no reason to go. I don't think I've been. Yeah, I really.
There's some big clubs. There's big clubs, and there's also like an underground techno community. Like every capital city.
I don't really get booked outside of North America at this moment in time. It's a bit shit. I wish I did. I wish I did more Europe stuff.
Yeah, you want more? Yeah. You could.
I think I just want to be more worldy, right? I want to experience more. Like I've been, don't get me wrong, the touring's been really lucky to me, and like I visited like Japan is my favorite place in the world, and like
I remember that vlog.
Been there a couple of times, and it's just like it's amazing.
That's crazy. You go all the way to Japan, but just like you know, from UK to continental Europe,
nothing. I think.
You've been to Spain though. I feel like I've like seen you in Spain.
I used to live in Ibiza.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I used to live in Ibiza. Years ago, like I was
what was that like?
17, 18, 19, 20, I was living in Ibiza.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was fun.
Well, yeah, what was
I can quite happily say that it was some of the best times of my life. I learned a lot there, and it's just amazing. And
I mean, how much a bottle of water costs and
yeah, fuck that. Well, it's pretty much the same in Vegas, I think.
True.
It's like the same, but have you spent much time out there?
In Vegas or Ibiza? No, I've never been to Ibiza, but Vegas, been a couple times, don't like it.
Vegas sucks. I'm sorry, Vegas.
I did the closest I got to the Spanish islands though was I lived in Barcelona for a few months.
Oh man,
got to kind of see what the culture was like there, and it's crazy.
Barcelona's beautiful. Barcelona's I played Razzmatazz. It's a great club.
I always end up there.
Yeah,
massive.
It's like an institution, isn't it? It's just such a great club. Yeah. But Barcelona's beautiful. It's one of my favorite cities that I've been to in Europe. I think. I don't know what it is about it. I think I have some really, you know, when you have some like really good memories from a city and you're like, okay, I really like that. But I remember like coming, so I used to drive to Ibiza. So I'd drive all through from the UK, all through France, down through Spain, hit Barcelona and get the ferry from Barcelona to Ibiza.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'd used to, like, I did one trip with my sister and then I did one trip with my dad as well, and it was just like amazing times. So I think that's what one of the reasons why I love Barcelona, but the food is unreal there as well.
Yeah it's dope. I had a really good time. Visited there on the backpacking tour and then ended up staying for a bit. It was like during the winter, so it wasn't as much going on, but the initial visit was during the summer, and just wild every night. I love the late night culture, just
amazing,
like,
right?
No sleep. Yeah.
Well, so you're from Bulgaria, right?
Yeah, I was born there, but moved to the US, my parents, when I was 5 years old.
Okay.
So yeah, just enough to avoid the accent, but also enough to, you know, get the cultural like bearings and you know, have that as the first language, and can always relate back to that. So
I was gonna say,
why I'm excited.
is it like kind of interesting for you, because being, I take it are your parents Bulgarian?
Yeah
So like having that culture around you and also growing up around it with your parents, but then also growing up with American, all the Americanisms, right? And
yeah,
how old are you now?
I forgot. 28. It's been locked up here too long.
You've experienced a lot of America. What's it like being very Bulgarian and also very American?
I feel like I get the best of both, because, you know, I can relate to Americans. I mean, a lot of, you know, my childhood was like a struggle, like, you know, being like the immigrant, the guy with the weird name, and just like, so it made me very like adaptable. Mm. Like, we moved around a lot, so I can adapt to like any kind of situation, wherever it is in the U.S. It was mostly the East Coast. Like, went to high school in South Carolina, went to
what was that like? Because Bulgaria and South Carolina are literally worlds apart.
Yeehaw. South Carolina's cool, man. It's just it's cool to visit. It's cool to, you know, just go out, chill out. My parents are there now.
Yeah. It's hot as fuck as well.
Yeah, kinda. It gets humid. It's kinda like DC. But it snows sometimes, actually. Mm. Like, anytime there's a snow day, it would be, school would close for like a week or two, like for like an inch of snow. But it was interesting, because I was like trying to like blend in with those people, and then, like, you know, obviously still have friends there, then the DC crowd, and then moving out to LA, and I was like trying to fit into the LA crowd, and it all became too much. So I decided to just throw everything out, get a backpack, go to Europe, and just like felt like more at home there. You know, despite language differences and, you know, huge culture shock in some places, but
massive,
yeah, it was, I like kind of playing the best of both. It's, you know, I get the America when it's convenient. Mm. The thing that ended my trip was when COVID hit, I was like stuck in Poland and I couldn't leave. And they were like going around with like papers, like the police, like just like hunting people down that like weren't there. But then Trump also closed the borders here. And yeah, like all the flights were being canceled. It was crazy. So ended up making it back home to the U.S. and it was just like a nice breath of fresh air.
How did you make it back?
It was just kept, like the flights kept canceling, but I would be like checking out of my apartment and moving out. Mm. And I'll be on the way to the airport with like all my, you know, all my backpacks and everything. And then halfway to the airport, be like flight canceled, and I have to like go back, and it's like the middle of the night, and I'll be like either sleep at the train station or find some hostel that's still not, hasn't heard about COVID.
Wow.
And it took like, it took like 2 weeks, and finally booked the flight that was going through Netherlands, made it home. So point being, US was nice to retreat back to, reset, figure out the whole Bad Boombox thing. And then now gonna attempt it again.
So do you think, like, I've spoken to a lot of artists, and obviously with a lot of our friends as well, like,
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Do you think COVID actually helped your career?
Oh, 1,000%. Like, if it wasn't for being stuck at home, bored, those TikToks wouldn't have been made. And I wouldn't have been able to unlock the, developing the sound and the artist thing, you know, maybe eventually, but like that was just such a kick in the ass. So, you know, obviously it's such an unfortunate situation for a lot of people, but, you know, there are positives. And, you know, when people got the majority of people, when they got a chance to stay home and figure something out, work on a new skill, something like that. Like it's a blessing in disguise.
I totally agree. It was the same for me. Kind of helped me out.
You made a lot of music, right?
Made a shit ton of music. Shit ton of music. But also it was like I got to do the podcast that I would never I've always wanted to do it. And before COVID I actually bought all the gear to do it. But then I was just like, I don't have time to start it. So it was like, for me, it was just like, yeah, hunker down and do some other things that I want to work on, really.
And yeah, I remember it was, you had the, I was following your vlog right when COVID was happening and just like see it all kind of come crashing down and unwinding. Like it was like several episodes. It's like, oh man, this got canceled. Oh man, this got canceled. I don't know. It's like this, because at the time, like we didn't know. You know, we didn't know. It was crazy. Like we didn't know what, like March, like everything got so scary and, you know, yeah. But, and then I immediately see you like 2 weeks later, like first podcast goes up and just like hammer them out every week.
Yeah. And it's great. And don't get me wrong, it doesn't get loads of listeners and it's fun. Like we would never be, and I say this on every fucking podcast, we would never have been able to have a conversation like this in person, because when, like, even if we went to dinner together, we would have our mobile phones. Someone would come and speak to us. Like we just wouldn't ever be able to sit down and like actually have long form conversations. And I think it's something that's missed massively in this day and age, because the likes of TikTok, the likes of Instagram, the likes of social media, the likes of text messaging, like no one fucking calls you anymore. Like who picks up the phone and calls? Like, I think it's really important to like, I do make this effort to just call my friends occasionally and just be like, what's going on? Like,
yeah.
And I was going to Arizona the other night, and one of my mates from Arizona, from the UK but he lives in Arizona, called me like he couldn't make it to the show, so he called me like the night before and we were fucking on the phone for 3 hours, and it was like it was great, but I'm like, 3 hours, dude, it's a bit much. But again, like it's just nice to catch up with people. It's just nice to be able to like build relationships, and I think the podcast has helped me do that massively.
Yeah, even like it doesn't matter. I mean, you've been picking up listeners, but you know, even if like I would do it too, like if even if no one's watching, you get to, you know, talk to people you wouldn't have like to. Yeah, you have your friends on, but I see you also have people on that, you know, you want to get to know better and you want to meet them, and that's awesome.
Yeah, I want to learn. I want to learn from people at the end of the day. It's kind of selfish, but it's like I want people.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, I want to get better, and I want to learn how to make better conversations and kind of hold myself in the world. And I think it's important. It's massively helped me. I think it's helped me keep in touch with people and kind of learn new things, which during the pandemic it's pretty hard, because I think everyone went a little bit insular, which is totally understandable.
It was even getting a phone call. I got because I'm looking for a roommate to replace me, and it's like he just like called me out of the blue, and I was like, I like looked at the phone like, whoa, like freaked out. Like, who's calling?
Yeah. So how long are you going to Prague for? Is it like inevitable? Is it for good, or just until you choose to
leave? We'll see. At least I'm gonna, you know, be getting, I'm gonna get an apartment, so at least a year.
Nice.
Sign a lease. See if I can blend into the Czech culture.
Mm.
Been a fan for a while.
Yeah. Can you speak the language?
No, but the advantage is that it's a Slavic language, same as Bulgarian, but it's a distant Slavic language.
Yeah.
So it'll be enough of a challenge to learn. And it sounds cool. It sounds pretty. They like do this weird thing with the R, like the R has like an accent over it, and you have to like make some crazy sound with your mouth. It's like
give me an example. I want to hear this shit.
It's like, well, like they have this like the standard rolled R like in the word like prominte.
Ah, okay.
Means like excuse me. And then like there's an R with the accent over it in like the word dobre. It's like, okay, you have to like make a sh sound but also roll the R. And interesting. It's like, yeah, it's don't know. I'm excited to learn. I love learning.
Can you speak? Can you speak any other languages?
Just Bulgarian and English. And I was living in France for a bit. I was really trying to learn French, so I can understand like simple sentences, simple words, and getting around there. Otherwise, in Berlin, one thing I regret is in Berlin, because I had so much else on my mind, I didn't have enough mental capacity to make the effort to learn German. But that would have been a good, you know,
I feel like it's tough there. I feel like it's tough in Berlin because
everyone speaks English.
Although it's a very German city and it's German, have their own rules and kind of it's still very English speaking.
And you can get they around. Love the rules.
Yeah,
even the unspoken ones. It's like
yeah. Yeah. The thing when I first went there was when you couldn't like use credit cards or bank cards and everything was like cash only. It still is in certain places.
Yeah, it's been a little while since I've been, obviously, but yeah, it's still mostly because they love Germans love privacy, mm-hmm. like more than anything else, and which, you know, fair, but sometimes like a little too paranoid. You know, like with cash, no one's tracking that.
Yeah.
Like you can do whatever you want with your cash. And I feel like that's real freedom there. There's also something about like filming, especially filming inside clubs. It's like they'll, even if it's not explicitly written on the under the name of the club, it's people will like shame you so much if you even like whip out your phone. Like a lot of clubs like confiscate your phone, like you have to put it into a locker. Because, you know, all sorts of weird stuff goes in there.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons, right, isn't it? In a lot of these clubs, there's a lot of things that are happening that just that should never be seen to the outside world. And I think Germany knows that it happens, but they just don't. If it's not in the media, then it's fine. But
yeah,
the minute somebody takes their phone into a black room in Berghain, like, it's game over.
Yeah, no, it's, it'll just, it makes, you know, they're keeping all the, like, people think it's like super exclusive, but it's more about, it's not about keeping people out. It's about like keeping the people inside safe and able to like really express themselves. Like, you know, if I wanted to like go dance, my balls hanging out, like I could, like, and yeah, that's freedom. But you know, sometimes paranoid, like I was, I was taking just like a Snapchat, like a selfie to my friend, like on the metro. Mm. And there was some dude like three seats down, like way down in the back of the train car. Like he sees that he's in the background of my like selfie Snapchat. And he like gets up, beeline, and starts yelling at me like, delete that right now. Delete that off your phone. I was like, dude, chill. It's like just going to my friend. He's like, no, delete it right now. I was like, no, bro, it's my phone. And he just storms out, goes to a different train car. And you know, it's like, it was like funny in the moment, but then I think about it, it's like, you know, actually, like, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's privacy,
obviously don't freak out like that, but
I was actually on a plane a couple of weeks ago, and something very similar happened, not to me, but I was sat next to a woman and she took a selfie, and the woman next to her was sat next to her and was like, do you mind not posting that online? Like, if you're sending it to a friend, like, fine, but can you not put that online?
Yeah.
Which I respect to a certain extent. It's just how you deal with it, right?
Yeah, yeah. You don't, like, freak out and, like... Dude, I almost, like, followed him into the other train. That would have been the ultimate. Yeah, there's a nice way to do it. But what do you think about... So I'm at the age where... you know, friends are starting to get married. Some are starting to have kids. How do you feel about, you know, like couples like posting, you know, photos of their kids and, you know, when they're babies and like all over social media? Is that kind of fucked up?
It's a bit weird. But I also, whatever, I don't give a fuck what anyone does. I think.
Yeah, I don't even look at it.
Yeah, I think there's like people. Like I'm all for if it makes you happy. Mm-hmm. You know what really fucking annoys me though is when someone all they post is their kids.
Yes,
it's like just start social media for them. Like
but even that...
it's weird. I wouldn't do it personally.
Who's gonna follow that?
Yeah, but it's weird. But it's like I don't want to see your baby every time. you post something. Like, I get it, you've got a newborn baby. It fucking looks the same as every other baby.
But... yeah, it's like gross. It's like covered in yogurt.
Yeah, like... I don't know. I personally, like, I keep my private. There's not much of us that is private nowadays, right? Mm. And I think for me is before the pandemic, I wouldn't post pictures, but I'd post a lot of stories of like my niece and nephews, of all of us just like hanging out and like all my family together. And during the pandemic, I was like, okay, I want to be able to keep some part of my life private. I don't want all of it online. I don't want everything on social media. If I'm dating someone, nothing goes online. If I'm with my family, it doesn't really ever go online unless I feel like it has to or like I want to. But I think that it's really important.
I think it's really the depth.
Yeah, I think it's really important to have a little bit of yourself still behind closed doors.
Mm.
Because I think what happens is then your private life becomes work, and then there's no balance.
Yeah, that's when people really burn out. Like, you can't ever escape it.
Yeah, I struggle with it. I really do. I struggle with the whole relaxing. And like,
what do you do to like? Do you ever have days where, I remember you had Patrick on here. He said he like just would take just like a week ghost off the grid, right? Do you ever do something like that?
No. I've never done that, and it scares the living shit out of me to do that. But like, I've got like, so next week, which isn't next week when this podcast comes out, but next week I've got 2 days I've got 2 days off in back in Detroit. So I come back on a Monday, and then I've got Tuesday, Wednesday before I then go back on tour. And today I was actually supposed to be touring, but a show got cancelled. Which is an interesting story to talk about in a sec. But I was like, oh, I should probably just take 2 days off because my schedules are being slammed. And then I'm like, but what the fuck am I going to do? I don't know. What about you?
Well, do you bring a lot of your like equipment and everything to, you know, if you're bored, like you can like make music like on the go?
I don't really get bored. I'm not that type of person where I'm never bored. I can't. Yeah, I just don't get bored. I don't know. I think for me, if I was to take time out, I'd love to, but I think I'd have to be with somebody to take that time out where
kind of force you into it.
Yeah, and I think I'd have to be in a relationship where they're like, Will, you're fucking leaving your phone at home. You're not posting on Instagram. But then again, it's also like, I don't know about you, but maybe it's not going to make any difference. But in my head, I'm like, oh, if I take 2 weeks out, like everyone's going to forget about me.
Yeah, yeah. It's always this worry. Attention spans are quick. I feel like the people that forget, like you didn't really want them as fans anyway.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, you know, like the real ones that like buy tickets, buy merch, buy the music, like they're, you know, like if you take a hiatus, you know, even like a month or two, like I feel like they'll, you know who you are, like they've been to your shit. So,
yeah, I think it's also that like algorithms fuck you.
But I keep getting proven wrong though with like the TikTok algorithm, because like there was times where I would just take several weeks off. Like, I couldn't think of anything. And, you know, I was like, oh, shadow ban this, algorithm that. But then you just like make one thing that's just like relatable or, you know, like, yeah, you just hit the right chord. So I don't know if it's as emphasized as we think it is. Like, maybe it's just something we tell ourselves.
I think
to also, stay busy.
Yeah, I think probably denial. Yeah. I think also it's probably changed, because I think TikTok, I watched this thing where... Did you watch The Social Dilemma?
Nah, all my friends kept telling me to, but
you should check it out. It's really I know you understand what it is about already, so it doesn't. You don't have to watch it, but it's really interesting. But the way the TikTok algorithm compared to the Instagram algorithm was, TikTok just want you to be famous on there. They want people to be famous.
So they give you that initial little jolt. That's exactly what happened to me. The very first video I posted was I woke up and it had I'm used to getting 12 views on my Instagram, and then it had, woke up had 100,000, and I threw up. I literally went to go throw up. I've never seen any attention like that before. And so that's when I committed, and then it just slowly started taking them away. And but
that's the thing. They at the end of the day, once you've got it, they have the power to take it away unless you're willing to pay to get it back. Because that's all Instagram is an advertising platform. At the end of the day,
now it's that.
Yeah,
it's it's become that's your business profile.
Yeah, totally. Where did the whole merch thing start? Because you have some fucking killer merch.
Yeah, I got to do another run. Well, my boy Martin in Berlin helped me out with that, with setting up the website and getting the merch and everything. The idea was, so I had two shirts. One of them was just the thing people see me do on TikTok, the Techno Ski, which was one of the TikToks that blew up. The other one was, when I was in Berlin, that's what my entire diet was just kebab. Just eat one kebab a day, and that's where. And I always love that logo because you see it everywhere. It's one of the most recognizable logos, at least if you've been to Europe. So it's just a donor, man. It's
funny because being British, it's the most quintessential food that you eat every time after a club. And you just, we call
it. And it always fucks you up, but you keep doing it. It's so delicious.
Yeah, I've never actually had a doner. But I always get chicken sheesh.
Mm.
It's good that.
Do you get the wraps, the Durham or the.
Yeah.
The one in the pita bread.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's so good.
I can't wait. the equivalent of that here in LA is just really good Mexican food, and you can find taco trucks everywhere. But I don't know, it's not the same.
It's not the same. I'm sorry to all the Mexican people living out here, but Mexican
food
is similar but just it's not got as much girth. I like to use the word girth because it just tastes better, pretty much. Tastes much better, yeah.
Yeah, get that. Get a nice girthy boy.
Yeah.
Get covered in that sauce. And but always, that's the thing too. They have them outside of clubs. And you remember Berlin clubs. I don't know. I'm sure it's like that in London. I've never been to London, but you go early to get your stamp. And you check out the music, whatever. Then you go pregame somewhere with your friends or get some food. Then you go back to the club. You're at the club for a while. You get that early morning donor, and then most people go back into the club, and that's how these 18-hour benders happen. But
I wish it was that. I wish it was like that in the UK, but it's not.
I always wonder, I see them outside of Berghain, right? Everyone's eating the kebab and then go back in. How? I eat one of those, it puts me out, dude. I want to go to bed. I start yelling.
How can you speak to people after that? Because your breath just stinks as well.
Yeah, it's just onions and especially, everyone's doing ecstasy there. Just mouthless already, just the Sahara Desert.
Yeah, it's kind of rough. I don't really get it, but in the UK it's more
what's the culture like?
Yeah, you drink at friends or a bar before you then go to the club for as long as you possibly can, and then kick out time is either depends what venues you're going to, but a proper club's like 4 or 5 in the morning. But like the really like cheesy clubs are like 2 in the morning. So you've got like the like the really cheesy ones kick out, and then you go to all the kebab shops, and there's always a fight. Always a fight. There's always a punch up in the kebab shop. And then
do people train? Like, what are the fights like?
Just drunk fat dudes, or even better, drunk women when they just fucking have the biggest cat fight. Just brutalizing. Just care, each other. Yeah. Like... And it's good to just, it's awful to say, but it's so funny just to watch from afar, because you just see it happening. Like somebody accidentally knocks into somebody, and then it all starts, and you're like, or someone looks at someone's girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever, and it's like game over. It's just hilarious.
At least they'll fight about it, and not like here in the US, there's always people are like more like afraid to start a fight because you never know like who's carrying a gun.
You might
or
get fucking shot.
Yeah. Which they'll do it over the smallest thing. Like,
yeah. I guess the equivalent in the UK, especially in like some of the bigger cities in the more like kind of run down neighborhoods, is that you just get stabbed.
True.
A lot of people.
You can survive that.
Yeah, you can. I'd rather get stabbed than shot, put it that way. Jesus.
Yeah, 100%. But either way, you have a cool story. You end up making it through.
and a good scar.
Yeah, and a good scar. Yeah. Yeah, like no one likes like a bullet wound that's like, dude, like you should get that taken care of.
Yeah, if you
got a nice like nice slash, like it looks badass. Like...
Yeah, I don't really want to get stabbed though or slashed, but whatever floats your boat, you never know. Come to the UK and find out.
I really want to. Yeah, dude, I want to hear more about like the UK rave culture, because like, you know, follow all the UK artists and have like UK fans telling me to come. And
it's just, amazing, like, man. Been. It is amazing. I think it's changed a lot over the years. It's becoming more like headline kind of based, where most of the world is really. But the amazing thing about the UK is that in each city, there's just so many clubs. Whereas like, and those so many clubs all play house and techno. It's not like, and then you also have the really shitty commercial clubs. It's just a bit of a party culture. And it's not just like in Germany, you've got Berlin, and you've got like a few other cities that have specific clubs, right? That are famous clubs. Mm. Whereas in the UK, it's tiny, and there's so many venues in each city. And then there's just always so many parties going on. You can literally just tour the UK and with all, like every regional club, with every regional town and city, there's clubs in. And you're like, this is, who would have thought that there's a fucking club in like Leicester? Like no one's ever even heard of Leicester, but it sounds great. And it's a proper rave. Yeah. It's like one of my mates throws a party in a place called Lincoln. And you're like, where the fuck is Lincoln? But he gets like 400 or 500 kids raving in a basement, and it's fucking slamming. And you don't really get that in, there's not many countries that have such a big culture of house and techno. Like it's usually just one city. Even in the States, like in most cities, there's one house and techno club. Yeah. Right? Apart from if you're in the majors, like San Fran, Chicago, LA, New York, DC.
Yeah.
And then Miami, yeah.
Yeah.
But, and yeah, Detroit.
That's what's missing.
I don't think you'll ever change that. Like, American culture, American music is so hip hop like biased, and there's more, it's a business at the end of the day. Like one of my friends used to run a institution in Detroit. He used to own a place called Grasshopper. In its heyday, it was the kind of the institution in, although it's technically not in Detroit, it's right by Detroit, so people would just class it as Detroit. And it was at the time when it was kind of in its heyday. It was fucking unreal. He's just opened up like a barcade that plays hip hop, and he's making shit ton more money. Like, and you're just like, well, at the end of the day, a lot of club owners aren't opening clubs they're opening clubs to make money.
Yeah.
They're not opening clubs because they love house music.
Yeah. Yeah, it's everything's very money talks here more than anything.
But in the UK, house music makes money.
Yeah, yeah, but it's like what like people can relate to too, because like there is a big like rap culture in the UK, right? But people do want to dance at the same time. Like here, it's like less about that, really. Like you don't
want money.
Yeah,
it's more like how big your bottle is and how big your bill is at the end of the night.
Exactly. Yeah, it's all some sort of flex. Like even like the things you go to enjoy have to have some kind of like value proposition. Like something has to be gained from that.
Yeah, totally.
And you know, I mean, things can change, but I mean, like all the house music and all that like came that like started in the US for a reason, but never really like took off as much as it did in Europe.
Yeah. I think that's the thing is, I was talking to Gene Ferris about it on the podcast, and obviously house music started here, and then Europe kind of took it on, and hip hop became good and became big here. And at the beginning, house music was for the underground, right? It's for the gay black scene.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the point where the gay black kind of community could kind of escape from everything else because they weren't allowed in. And then when it became a little bit more acceptable to be gay and black, that scene kind of died down and got taken over by hip hop. And a lot of it is, how can you get out of the hood in America? How can you leave the hood? And we all know house music, you can earn good money, but you're not earning crazy bank that these hip hop guys would earn.
Yeah.
And then how do young kids growing up in poor neighborhoods, how do they get out the hood? And that's the only way they get out of the hood is by making a shit ton of money. And how do you make a shit ton of money? Well, you make hip hop. And I think that's kind of, I could be completely wrong, and I'm open for people to like call me out on that, but that's my view on it.
I think I think you hit the nail on the head. It's because being, you know, having a lot of money in the US is awesome. Like if you're super rich, you know, you go to the US, you'll have a great time. Not having any money in the US is like the opposite. It really sucks, as opposed to, you know, certain countries like take care of you. US, like, I mean, depending on the state, like California offers like some things, but it's not great. So that's like a survival thing. And then like the survival mentality like carries over when, you know, let's say you do see like a little bit of wealth or see a little bit of success, but like that like never goes away. It's like just the hustle, the grind, and just no free time. Like, you know, you can never go enjoy yourself. Like, so yeah.
Yeah, that
hopefully things can change.
That European lifestyle is a lot more attractive to a lot of people.
Yeah,
and you got the best of both worlds.
I always forget to, but going back to what we were talking about earlier, like I forget to like just chill. Can't like take a day off. Yeah. Like can't like chill. I was went to go to like a cabin with my friends a couple months ago. It was the first time I was away from my computer for one day, literally. First time away from my computer in probably like 4 years. Like I never even if I go do something during the day, like go to the beach or, when I was backpacking, or I was like backpacking all over Europe, just like going, like seeing like cool sites, cool places, go party every night with people. My default comfort zone always in the morning, open up my computer, try to find something to like work on, something to do. Just want to just chill and
It's tough.
Having one day off a week makes a huge difference.
Does it help you?
It did it the last few weeks. It was just decided just not work on anything for one day. It was usually like a Saturday or Sunday, like after like a night out.
Yeah.
And just like watch a movie or like, you know, go for a walk or something. Mm. It made the other 6 days just like more productive. Like I could focus more.
Yeah.
And man. it's just one day, you know.
Yeah, so, in the grand scheme of life, it's not much. And if it helps, if it helps the creativity, then winner, right?
And that's where memories are made too. You have in your memory, there's like a reference point to every.
Yeah.
So you do it once a week, each week, something you do something fun or something good for you. That's how your brain like categorizes like the other 6 days of work that you just did. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's when I made this song, or oh, that's when I started this project or whatever. So
totally, man, I love that. Love that. We've just done an hour and 10 minutes. That's fucking gone quick, and I feel like we could go on forever. But I'm sweating out in this studio right now, and I need to get the fuck
where.
Out
where
of
are you?
I'm in Detroit.
Oh hell yeah!
Yeah.
You have a studio there?
I live in Detroit when I'm in America.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So
that's sick.
I've been living here 4 years. Yeah, 4 years now.
Wow.
And then, but in the pandemic, I was back in the UK.
Yeah.
But I'm going back to the UK in a couple of weeks. So when this comes out, I'll actually be in the UK. But yeah, man, thank you so much for being on. I've loved talking to you. It's been really nice getting to know you. And I'd love to have you on again in the future.
I'm down.
Before we go, how can people follow you on social media and kind of give them the spiel?
So Bad Boombox, Instagram / Bad Boombox, TikTok @ Bad Boombox, YouTube posting regularly on there now too. Got new music, Bad Boombox on Spotify, new track just came out, got another self-release coming up, a little bit on the darker, faster techno side, and Bad Boombox on all the things. You'll see the mullet mustache guy on whatever meme page repost my dances. So yeah,
legend,
I'll be
man.
Waiting for y'all there.
Thank you so much. Keep safe. Safe travels.
Thanks for having me,
man.
Dude.
Catch you soon. All right. Take care. And that is a wrap. Thanks for everyone to listening. Big ups to Bad Boombox. Go follow him on all the social medias, on Spotify, etc., etc. If you don't, go check his music out. Have a great week. Keep safe and see you next time.
What if you could have a career where the opportunities are as vast as our nation, where it's not about mission statements, but a shared mission? At U.S. Customs and Border Protection, we go beyond to protect more than borders. From ship to shore, air to ground, cities to local communities, CBP agents and officers are keeping people safe. Join U.S. Customs and Border Protection and go beyond for something far greater than yourself. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.